Shabbat Shalom, everyone. My name is Sonny Israel Abel Benjamin Alexander Hawkins, and I'd like to serve forever as a priest starting very soon. It's now time to start finding your seats for Sabbath services. May I have your attention, please? Shabbat Shalom, everyone. My name is Sonny Israel Abel Yedea Hawkins, and I would now like to serve you forever as a priest starting very soon. It's a privilege and honor to present to you the sons and daughters of Yisrael Abel now entering the sanctuary. I would now like to turn it over to Yahab Hyler Hawkins.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. May all be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. The title of my speech is Abraham's Seed Heirs According to the Promise. This is such a wonderful message. We are Abraham's seed. We are Abraham's seed only if we do the will of our Father Yahweh. For my first reference, please turn to Genesis 24:6, found on page 20. It says, "And I will make your seed multiply as the stars of heaven. I will give to you, your seed, all these lands, and in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed." For my first reference, we will read the fourth book of Israel, the remnants of Yahweh, chapter 19, the remnants of Yahweh, verses 12, Numbers 12, verses 121 through 125. Verse 29. If you are as the Messiah, then you are seed of Abraham or Abraham's seed. Did you get that? You are Abraham's seed, heirs according to the promise, if you do the will of our Messiahs. We will tie all this together in a moment, and you will understand what it means to receive a curse or a blessing. As Yahweh said, whoever curses you will be cursed, and whoever blesses you will be blessed. Acts 3:25. You are the children of the prophets and the covenant which Yahweh made with our father, saying to Abraham. Notice this covenant. It is the same covenant which was made to Abraham. Nothing has changed from it at all. It is the same covenant. And in your seed, all the families of the earth will be blessed. And you, along with the rest of the seed of Abraham, those who keep the laws of Yahweh, this whole world will be blessed. All nations will be blessed. You can read this on Zechariah 14. Write these scriptures down and read them in the evening at home. That is just the start of what you are going to be doing. Bring these nations back to great blessing. To you first, Yahweh, having raised up Son Yahshua, sent him to bless you and to turning every one of you away from his iniquities. And turning every one of you away from his iniquities. This is the blessing that was promised Abraham. That is what Yahshua came for, to turn us away from our iniquities. In this he will all nations be blessed. Please turn to Genesis 5. 26:5, found on page 20. Because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. It started with Adam and Abel. In the ninth book of Israel, part 1, chapter 19, verses 5 through 6, it says, "The lamb's wife is going to be Abraham's seed, and of course the seed of Abel. But from your seed, and of course we're shown that this seed is what it actually means in book 2. Is that those who are begotten by his or by this character. He brings forth of Yahweh, they become the seed of Abraham because of Abraham's teaching. Abraham showed the Hebrew obedience to Yahweh in all things. We will show the same obedience to Yahweh in all things. This is what we have learned from Israel Hawkins. May Yahweh bless your understanding. I'd like to come to Sunday Israel for prayer."
Great Deacon David Knighton Hawkins.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Please be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. Well, I heard there was a race going on over here at Abel. And so, I ran over here to see what was going on. And I got here and they were right. Because look at all these people sitting here, right here in front of me, running this race. Sitting here running this race right now. Praise Yahweh. Well, yes, yeah, so when you're running a race, you know, you've got to endure the pain. You've got to endure the fatigue, the pressures. All of it is part of this course, you know. It all seems to increase also towards the end. Remember, the pressure, the fatigue, the pain, it increases towards the end. I thought it was pretty interesting. I looked up the gematria on enduring the trials. Enduring the trials. And interestingly enough, we came up with one of the numbers was 1074, of course, and that would explain that everyone here, of course, Israel Hawkins, and everybody here at the House of Yahweh is running this race and enduring these trials. And then, of course, you see I've got marked the English and also the Jewish, 179 and 747. And 179 means indestructible, unstoppable, and endless, which, if you consider, that's exactly what this work is. It's indestructible, it's unstoppable, and it goes on forever. It's endless. And the gates of hell will not prevail against this. Then 747 came out as author, originator, founder, leader, prince, ruler, captain. And you know, Pastor shows us the way as the founder of this, like the peaceful solution, founder of the peaceful solution, then the leader of this work. He shows us the way to endure these trials. But you got to remember that the pressure gets bad. And when the pressure gets bad, once again, you know, we've got to expect that. 1074, pastor's tag number, and we're all tagged with that number if you're here at the House of Yahweh in this race, enduring till the end. And remember, 179, you know, it's indestructible, unstoppable, and endless. Don't worry about that pressure, just deal with it. Endure until the end. There's going to be a lot more coming about this race, and you're going to hear from quite a few people concerning this. A few of the scriptures that you can have in mind as this is as we're going through this would be Acts 20, 24. It's on page 862. We could just take a quick look at it. Page 862. And it's Acts 20, 24. At the very bottom, it says, "But none of these things move me, nor do I esteem my life precious to me, so that I may might finish my course with joy." This course of life. Finish this race. "And the ministry which I have received from Yahshua Messiah to proclaim the message of the unmerited pardon of Yahweh." Then you could write this down. Galatians 5:7. 5:7, it's talking about you were running this race. What caused you to turn to disobedience? You must obey. We want to remember to obey and to have humility while we're running this race, while we're running this course of life. And then you could write down 1 Corinthians 9:24. 1 Corinthians 9:24. Take a look at those. Keep those in mind along the way. And we're going to move right along here. I'd like to introduce those that will be speaking today. The first one is Barzillai, son of Israel, Abel Barzillai. Now, interesting thing about him is he's been in the House of Yahweh all his life. And I'll tell you, I think he was born with a book in his hand. He's got a book every time you turn around. Then we've got Deacon Buffalo Bill Hawkins, and he's been in the House of Yahweh all of his life. Of course, you know, for fun, we know that he practices writing speeches and giving them. And you know, he does a diligent job at it, and he likes doing it. Then next, we've got Deacon Ananiah Hawkins, and he's from Chicago. And he's had an opportunity to see the pains and struggles and trials on the streets of Chicago. And so in 2004, he decided he wanted to be a part of running this race. Now, next we have Deacon Yahshua Hawkins from Atlanta, Georgia. He was baptized on the 49th day of the Omer in 2012. He first heard about the House of Yahweh in 2011. And he was looking for something to prove to somebody why they should have one of the, that thing called Easter, why they should have that on Sabbath instead of Sunday. And in doing so, it kept popping up on the computer, House of Yahweh, House of Yahweh, House of Yahweh. And he started learning about the holidays and how they were, it was God worship. And so the next thing you know, here he is at the House of Yahweh. Now, next we have Deacon Emmanuel Hawkins. And he first heard about the House of Yahweh in 2004. And by 2007, he decided to get out of Kazakhstan, where he was at, and run over here and be part of this race. And you know, that was a long ways to come, and he's been here ever since. Then next we have Deacon Hemanya Hawkins from Chicago, and he was told about the House of Yahweh by a secret worshiper. I didn't get any more detail on that, if the person ever showed up here or not. But they told him of the House of Yahweh, and then he came in 2005. Now, so all of these young men and men we've talked about, they've been here running this race, running this course of life, taking hold of the Peaceful Solution Character Education Program and putting it to work in their life for all these years. Okay, so to finish up, we've got Kohan Levi Hawkins. And Kohan Levi came as a teenager to the House of Yahweh. He was introduced by a friend who gave him a booklet, Who is Lord God and Who is Baal? And that person is still in the House of Yahweh today. And 28 years later, so is Kohan Levi. Then we have Kohan Shimon Hawkins from New York City. And he found out about the House of Yahweh from family members. And of course, he ran here as quick as he could to be part of this race. And he's been in the House of Yahweh now 22 years learning the Peaceful Solution. Then to finish things up, we've got Kohan Nathaniel Hawkins, and he was 18 when he came to the House of Yahweh. And the thing that brought him to the House of Yahweh was realizing that Satan had executed the biggest conspiracy in the history of creation in her attempt to take over Yahweh's authority. So he's been here ever since he was 18 years old. All these young men and men have been learning the house, learning the doctrine of the House of Yahweh, learning how to run this race, learning the laws, and how to practice these in their life through the Peaceful Solution Character Education Program. And they're all doing a really great job, and they're here to speak with you today about how you too can continue enduring and running this race. And without waiting any further, if you'll all please stand. It's my honor and privilege to present to you the great Son of Israel Abel, Barzillai Hawkins.
Praise Yahweh. Shabbat Shalom, everyone. You may be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. The title of my speech today is A Curse with a Cause. Because the truth is, curses, Yahweh doesn't allow curses to come upon us for no reason. If you turn over to Proverbs chapter 26, Proverbs chapter 26, and verse 2, it says, As a fluttering sparrow and a flying swallow will alight, so a curse causeless will not come. So these curses come from sin. If you turn over to 2 Corinthians chapter 4, 2 Corinthians chapter 4, 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 3 through 4, Second Corinthians chapter 4. It says, But if the message is hidden to those who are lost, for the gods Elohim of this world, led by Satan, have blinded the minds of those who do not believe, that the light of the message of the glory of Messiah, who is the image of Yahweh, shall not shine upon them. So this is what curses come. This is where curses come from. When we allow the gods and you know, we start listening to and obeying the teachings of the gods, that's when we allow curses to come upon us. If you turn over to Psalms chapter 119, verses 1 through 7. Psalms chapter 119, verses 1 through 7. It's found on page found on page 482. It says, "Blessed are the undefiled, blessed are the undefiled in the way who walk in the laws of Yahweh." And walking in the laws of Yahweh is one way to stop these curses from coming upon you. "Blessed are those who keep his testimonies, who seek Yahweh with their whole heart. They also practice no iniquity. They walk in his way. You have commanded us to diligently keep your precepts." Now remember that word diligently, because I'll get back to that word diligently later. "Oh, may our behavior be constant in keeping your statutes. For if we concentrate on your every law, all 613 of them, not only 600 of them, all 613 of them. For if we concentrate on your every law, we can never be put to shame. We will praise you with uprightness of heart, and we will learn your righteous judgment, and we will keep your statutes. Oh, do not utterly forsake us, O Yahweh." So as you can see, a curse caused this will not come. And, you know, here are some of the examples of some of the curses that can come from us practicing God worship. Death, diseases, murder, unnatural disasters, and drought. And the Savior Yahshua Messiah all told us about this. All these curses come for a reason. If you, Deuteronomy chapter 28 is full of all the curses that come from disobeying Yahweh's laws and turning to God's Elohim. If you turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 28, verses 14 through 15. It's found on page 169. Verses 14 through 15. For if you diligently observe to do all of Yahweh's laws, then you will not turn aside from any of the laws which I command you this day, to the right hand nor to the left hand, by going after any God's Elohim to serve it. However, if you do not obey Yahweh your Father and do not carefully follow all his statutes which I command you this day, then all these curses will come upon you and accompany you. And notice, Yahweh is not the one that's bringing these curses upon us. We're bringing the curses upon ourselves. So notice that word diligently. That word, if you would please turn over to, or the word diligently, notice, you know, Yahweh not only wants us to keep his laws, but he wants us to keep them diligently. It should be second nature to us. Like, you know, we could do it really fast. So most of the curses that come upon the world today are because of disobeying this law. If you would turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 31, a few pages over, pages 173. I'm sorry, 174. And verse 19, it says, "Now this perfect law, therefore, is written for you. Teach them to your children." So if we keep these laws, then blessings will come upon us. And it tells us in verse 18, it says, "And I will surely hide my face from you that day because of all the evil that you have done by turning to hinder God's Elohim." Turning to hinder God's Elohim. That's the reason that mankind has the curses coming upon them. Because they do not keep what it says in verse 19, but they do keep what it says in verse 18. They turn to hinder God's. If you would please turn over to Exodus chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20. And look at verse 3. It says, "You shall have no hinder gods at all. They are in opposition against me." So the gods are in opposition against Yahweh. And in Psalms, in the book of Psalms, Yahweh tells us that he stands in the assembly of the gods. And, you know, he brings judgment among those gods. If you turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 28 and verse 36 to 37. Deuteronomy 28 verses 36 to 37. It says, "Yahweh will bring you and the king whom you have set over you to a nation which neither you nor your fathers have ever heard of. There you will worship gods to the wood, stone, Elohim, and Teraphim. And you will become a fig of horror and taunt the object of the biting remarks among all the nations where Yahweh will drive you. So these are some of the curses that can come upon us. And notice, in your hatred for Yahweh, you will turn aside and bring destruction upon yourselves. And remember that 1 hour burning is what they're gonna bring upon themselves. Look at verse 65 on page 171. It says, among those nations who will find no place to repose, nor will the bottom of your feet find a place to rest, but there Yahweh will give you a desperate heart, eyes weary, longing gradual loss of all hope, and anxiety, tortured, and a restless mind. If you would please turn to Psalms chapter 119. Remember the scripture. I just read it. I want to read it again. Psalms 119. Psalms 119 and verse 4. It's found on page 42. It says, You have commanded us to diligently keep your precepts. So notice there, Yahweh's not asking us, can you keep my precepts? Can you diligently keep them? He's commanding us to diligently keep his precepts. Now, Yahweh gives us many reasons to keep his laws. One of them is they'll make us perfect. Okay? And he also reminds us that these laws are not grievous. Okay? It makes us perfect, converting the whole person. They also make the simple ones wise. So, in conclusion, let us strive to come to perfection so we can show Yahweh that we will truly overcome. Praise Yahweh. With that, if you'd all please stand. I'll turn it over to Center Vision Label Buffalo Bill Hawkins.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. You may be seated. May the PCI be with each and every one of you. Today I'm going to be talking about Satan and the work she's created, the work she's done, the mess she's created in the world. Now, we'll go back to the beginning in Genesis 3. Turn to Genesis 3 and look at verse 1. Now the serpent was more subtle and crafty than any beast of the field. Notice she's likened unto a serpent. It's not that she is a serpent. It's not the way the world portrays it, that some serpent just slid up to Eve, just slid it up and started talking to her. We know snakes don't talk. And any beast of the field which Yahweh had made. Now, and the serpent said she said to the woman, has Yahweh indeed said, you will not eat of every tree of the garden? Notice that, more subtle and crafty, more sneaky, more tricky, and more, coming up with more tricks, more ways of getting people to commit sin. And then she questioned Yahweh's authority. In verse 3. Did Yahweh say this? Oh, he's just an old geezer. He doesn't know about fun. He doesn't know what fun is. Look at verse 4. And the serpent said to the woman, you will not die. You're not going to die. Come on, Yahweh's just joking. He's not. You can't really believe he's serious. You're not going to die. Well, come 50 years old, you've got to take medication every 20 minutes. But you're not going to die. You're not going to die. We just made a pill that made you live forever. Don't worry about the side effects. You'll go crazy and everything, but don't worry about that. We'll handle that. The doctors will handle that for you. Your eyes will be opened. They'll be opened real wide when you see your hospital bill. You may even have to revisit the hospital when you see how much it costed. And of course, you'll be as gods. And what do gods do? They fight, they war, just as we see going on in the world today. Turn to Eob, the book of Eob or Yashub. Eob 2 on page 412. Again, there was a day when the sons of Yahweh came to present themselves before Yahweh, and Satan, the adversary, and accuser, also came among them to present herself before Yahweh. Yahweh said to Satan, where did you come from? Satan answered Yahweh and said, from going back and forth in the earth, from walking up and down in it. Oh, I was just down the road starting fights with people, making sure they got enough diseases, making sure their hospital bill was racked up real high. That's all I was doing. And then in verse 3, Yahweh asked Satan, "Have you considered my servant Eob?" Well, he's only listening to you because he's healthy. That's all. There's none like him. He goes on to speak of him and the righteousness he does. And he says in verse, Satan says in verse 4, "Skin for skin, a man will give all he has for his own life. He'll sell his soul into slavery just to make sure that he stays alive, that he's not ill. He only does what you say when you have a hedge of protection around him. But when he's not protected, he'll sin. He'll just go off into sin." And so that didn't work. So she had to move along and start try another trick out. In verse 11 of Isaiah chapter 14, turn to Isaiah 14, page 538. It says, "Your pomp, pride, is brought down to the ground, is brought down to the grave, shield, and the sound of your harps, with the sound of your harps, the worm, the maggot is spread over you, is spread under you, and worms cover you. How you have fallen from heaven, O Hoel. You've lost your strength and your power and your original job. She used to be Yahweh's husband and Yahweh's wife. Yahweh was her husband. But when she stopped keeping the laws, when she went into sin, then she stopped being Yahweh's wife. You were cut down to the ground, you who weaken the nations. Weaken the nations is stirring up strife and arguments and getting nations to fight each other. Is that weakening the nations? Well, of course it is. She specializes in starting chaos. She said, "I will sit on the highest place. I will raise up myself up above mankind. Yet you will be sent down to the pit, and those who see you will stare at you and say, 'Is this the one who shook the earth and made the kingdoms tremble? Is this the one? This is the woman?' But you were cast out of your grave like an abominable branch." Look at verse 19. "Like the garments of those who were slain, thrust through with the sword, like those who descend to the stones of the pit as a carcass trampled underfoot." Satan again tried to display, or did display her tricks, but they failed again. In Matithiah 4, read for yourself. It's Matithiah 4, 1 through 11. Now, Yahshua instilled into his disciples exactly the strategy he used in Matithiah. Turn to Jacob 4. Jacob 4, verse 7. It says, Therefore, submit yourselves to Yahweh. Resist the devil and she will flee from you. Satan hates everyone who does her work. Everyone, including those who do her work. Even the ones that she employs to, like the Pope and the Vatican, she hates them too. When she found out she cannot be stronger than Yahweh, when she cannot be as powerful as Yahweh, then she made it her ambition to make sure that mankind could not receive their blessings. In Isaiah 57, page 566, I'm going to read a few verses here. Verse 3 starting out with, "But you come here, you sons of those who call on demons, you offspring of those who apostatize yourself from Yahweh and commit whoredom with God El. Against whom do you mock? At whom do you sneer and put out your tongue? Are you not the children of transgression, a seed of falsehood?" Look at verse 7. "Upon a lofty and high mountain you have set your bed, but there you went up to sacrifice, to offer sacrifice. Behind the doors and the doorposts you set up your remembrance. For you have disclosed yourself to those other than me. You have given up to them. You have enlarged your bed. You have made a pact with those whose bed you love, and you looked on their hand, symbol of an inflaming image. You went to the king Moloch with ointment. You increased your perfumes. You sent your messengers far away, but you will be sent down to shield the grave." Verse 12, I'll expose your false righteousness and your evil works. They will not help you. When you cry out, let your companies, all your gods, Elohim, deliver you. But the wind will carry them all away. Vanity will take them all. But he who puts in his trust in me will possess all the land and inherit my holy mountain. Here's some of the things taking place because of Satan's reign and her rulership. The way she's confused mankind, deceived them. The chaos that she's created, like I said, she specializes in creating chaos and starting wars. It says here, the U.S. already drafted the list of targets for a potential strike in Syria. U.S. and allies can have missiles ready to strike Syria in 24 hours. It says, from bases in Jordan, Kuwait, and Crete, the strike group of the U.S., Britain, and France are able to strike Syria upon confirmation of a chemical attack. U.S. President Donald Trump has said he will strike Syria if there is a chemical attack, a sentiment echoed by France's Macron and the U.K.'s Theresa May. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said the West was trying to turn Syria into another Iraq or Libya. Then plows through pedestrians outside hospital in China. Two injured in stabbing at Amsterdam railway, suspect shot by Dutch police. 22 cars burned in Sweden as country rocked by rising crime. Pakistan stands with Iran as U.S. reimposes sanctions. Leader of self-proclaimed Donetsk People's Republic killed in East Ukraine blast. New Israeli missiles could target places farther than Lebanon. Pepper spray, arrest, obscenities, heated University of North Carolina, Silent Sam protests engulf campus. Israeli forces attack Palestinian protesters in Gaza, injuring 240. The end result of this is of Satan and her gods, her worthless gods, that world worships. The end result of this is going to be death. In Exodus 12:12, from my closing scripture, Yahweh says what he will do to the gods. Exodus 12, and look at verse 12. For I will pass through the land of Egypt this night, and strike down all of the firstborn of the land of Egypt, both men and animals, and I will execute judgment on all the gods of Egypt. I am Yahweh. And Pastor brought out that Egypt means sin. All the God-worshipping gods of 4,499 religions in the world, all of them will be abolished, and only Yahweh will remain. Don't follow the heathen in their ways. Their end result is death. They're not their ways, only worthlessness. But we can choose life by choosing Yahweh, as Deuteronomy 30 says. And with this, I'll turn the services over to the great deacon, Ananias.
Shabbat shalom. Everyone can be seated, please. All right. So if you will, please be turning over to Exodus chapter 29, and we'll be reading verses 11 through 12. That's on page 69. It should be in the book of Yahweh. So the title of my speech today is, Don't Be Deceived by the Altar of Death. Do Not Murder is a literal and an eternal commandment. All right, so for perspective's sake, I also want to read from the prophetic word starting out before we go into Exodus. This comes from Pastor. On page 5. It says, the four horns represent slaughter by war from the time of Cain until it ends with nuclear war in this generation. Now, with that having been said, let's look at Exodus chapter 29 and verses 11 through 12, where the details concerning what the great teacher said there plainly are given to us in a couple words. So, all right, starting our reading, at 11, it says, "Then you shall kill the bull in front of Yahweh, in Yahweh's presence, at the entrance to the tabernacle of meeting. You shall take of the blood of the bull and put it on the horns of the altar with your finger and pour out the rest, all of the rest, at the base of the altar." That word there, blood. All right. I don't know if you all can see it, but that's word 1818 in Strong's. And as we can see, just as the greatest teacher was saying, this whole entire thing is figurative. It's a figure. It's a figure that's used to communicate a lesson. And it figuratively, the blood in this whole thing represents bloodshed. Bloodshed. The word kill in verse 11. Can it go down further? The word kill means to slaughter and massacre. So just like the great teacher said, this figure that's given us here is speaking about all the bloodshed through massacre and through slaughter from the time of the first righteous priest Abel on up until now. We see the details of that. It's something that we can use, this blood, the blood tells a tale, to help us to see what they've been responsible for throughout history and to also identify them. If we turn over to the book of Matithia, Messiah does just this. And the greatest teacher has brought this one out a number of times. Matithia chapter 23 and verse 25. That's on page 751. All right. And it's speaking about this same figure, the same teaching tool that we saw there in Exodus, Messiah, and using it to teach about this group that's symbolically represented by, just like the greatest teacher told us, starting in verse 25. He says, "Woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites. You cleanse the..." Okay. Is it in there somewhere? Outside of the cup. All right. So, the next page. Aren't you glad when it works out that way? So, all right. The next page, starting at verse 34, says, "On this account, behold, I send to you prophets, wise men, and scribes, and some of them you will kill. Some of them you will kill and impale. Some of them you will scourge in your synagogues and persecute from city to city, so that upon you may come all the righteous blood shed upon the whole earth, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah." Speaking about that same blood that we saw in that figure before. "The son of Berechiah, whom you murdered between the porch and the altar." So in Messiah's time period, this group, he puts a face on them for us there and identifies them. They were the Pharisees, Sadducees, Essenes, and Herodians. In Lamentations 14:12. "The kings of the earth and all the inhabitants of the world would not have believed the adversary and the enemy could enter the gates of Jerusalem because of the sins of her prophets and the iniquity of her priests who have shed the blood," that same blood that's given in that figure, "of the just in the midst of her." So in the great prophet Jeremiah's time period, if you remember, he said the same thing. He said, "I was led like a sheep to the slaughter. I didn't know that they had designs on me to try to kill me, that they wanted to try to take away the tree along with the fruit." So he identified them also in his time period, this same blood, speaking about this slaughter. And going all the way back to the beginning, just like the greatest teacher said, we have this. And just skipping to the bottom, this is Genesis chapter 4 and verse 8. The voice of your brother's blood speaking about the very first slaughter of the first righteous priest Abel, just like Messiah was telling us here in Matithiah chapter 24. The first one slaughtered, the first crusade by Cain, the minister of the serpent. So that's the history of the altar of death and the group symbolized by it, BY, before Yahshua. Any confusion concerning why it's so important to use Yahshua? A person can do a Yeshua says and get information concerning that. Did Yahshua Messiah pre-exist in search of a savior? All of that material is available also to understand why it's so valuable to use that in reference to the Messiah as opposed to the title, the erroneous title that many people attribute to him. All right, so that's all a rough outline of their activities, their slaughter, their massacres. BY, once again, a rough outline. Now we're going to move very quickly, hopefully, AY, which is after Yahshua. So during Yahshua's time period, he said that they were the Pharisees, Sadducees, Essenes, and Herodians, right? Okay, so getting over to Revelations. See, because I'm running out of time. I believe it's Revelation 17. Revelation 16. Revelation 17, 6. And that is on, but all right, Revelation 17, and let's get to 6. And I saw the woman, and this is speaking about the Catholic Church is what it's speaking about. And I saw the woman arrayed in purple and scarlet color and decked with all kinds of gold and precious stones, skipping down to 6. And I saw the woman drunk with the blood, this same blood. The blood tells the tale. It tells the story of their deeds, and it also identifies them. And I saw the blood of the martyrs of Yahshua. And when I saw her, I wandered with great astonishment. So today, having got up to that point, that's them AY. That gets us to where we are today. The altar of death is the Catholic Church. They're responsible for leading the kings of the earth. And they're the ones who are even now deeply involved in slaughter. Today, I would like to talk about one slaughter in particular. The Great Slaughter at Rwanda. If you could please play the video.
The small East African country of Rwanda. 800,000 people were slaughtered by their own government.
This was ordinary men, women, and children, and the only reason that they were killed was because they were Tutsi.
Virtually the entire world turned away and did almost nothing to stop the genocide.
In retrospect, it all looks very clear, but at the time, what was happening in Rwanda, the situation was unclear.
They cannot tell me that they didn't know. Everybody knew what was happening.
Tonight on Frontline, the full story of perhaps the darkest and most brutal tragedy of our time. It is a story told by the victims and by the killers.
By the time the genocide was over, I was so angry at America. America, the beautiful, America, the brave.
They are all still haunted by what happened.
I was the commander, and hundreds of thousands of people died. I can't find any solace in statements like I did my best.
Still haunted by the ghosts of Rwanda.
Everybody knew every day live what was happening in this country. You could follow that every day on TV, radio. Who moved? No, but nobody. Who moved? No, but nobody.
Yeah. So I spoke to the Red Cross representative and I asked him how many people had been killed. And Philippe said something along the lines of, in the first few weeks, I said that 100,000 people had been killed. A few weeks later, I said, loud and clear, that I think 500,000 people have been killed. And now you're another journalist, and you're asking me again. And I'm telling you, I can't count anymore. 500,000 people have been killed, and I've stopped counting.
They cannot tell us or tell me that they didn't know. They were told every day what was happening there. So don't come back to me and tell me, sorry, we didn't know. No. Everybody knew.
No one said anything. Everyone knew. And why wouldn't they? Because whether they were willing to express it or not, what they were aware of is who was responsible for it. And nobody wanted to speak against them, but we are. High time the Catholic Church came clean on the role in the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi. There's not enough time to read this article, but a person could check it out for themselves. It's really a decent write-up on what took place there. But of course it was the Catholic Church. It was the altar of death and those working, her minions, those working on her part, that carried that out. Everybody can rest at ease now, though, because they have apologized just like he asked for. Look at the Pope. See, you know anything about non-barbecues, you can see from his face how he's very sincere and slouched shoulders. He doesn't want to do that at all. They're not at all apologetic for what they did. In fact, they're probably tired of having to do it. But I offer things like this in confirmation of that. They're doing the same thing, hiding the priests who were responsible for this matter. It was Catholic priests. We couldn't read it. But there were Catholic priests who were leading these bands. These gangs had knives in their hand, machetes in their hand, guns themselves, killing people. They had churches of people who came to them for refuge, and they were turning them over to have their church bulldozed. So it's not like they were just complicit. They were responsible for it. And this is just one of the slaughters that they've been responsible for. So there were other things that I wanted to include, including interesting articles like, you know, that. Well, this, which gives a possible cause as to why it was that the Catholic Church decided to go after him. It's the same reason they go after everyone. But in closing, to tie it all in, speaking about the race, let's turn over to Isaiah really quickly. Isaiah 59:7. And we'll close on this scripture. Time flies. All right. So, in speaking about this same group, Isaiah 59 and verse 7. And this ties into the race. We're racing, like the great teacher said, to the kingdom, just like the forerunner has. But now, as for them who are racing along with us, their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. The same blood that we saw in that figure given to us in Exodus, and the same blood we were seeing there, and that's just one. Their thoughts are thoughts of iniquity, and wasting and destruction are in their paths. But of course, we're racing to get our positions in the kingdom so that we can put a stop to it. And we're racing because we're trying to get it done as quick as possible. So that's all that time will allow today. And with that, I will turn it over to the great deacon, Yahshua Hawkins.
Shabbat shalom, great saints of Yahweh. You may be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. So the feast is right around the corner. In fact, literally, if everything goes right, trumpets is next third day. So we've been looking at getting ready for the feast and getting spiritually ready for the feast. I want everybody to take a moment and turn over to Exodus 20:15. It's on page 61. Exodus 20:15 simply says, "You shall not steal." You shall not steal. Seems pretty simple. Should. But is it? Is it really that simple? So the title of this today will be, "Don't Help the Adversary." Don't help the adversary. So what does this have to do with Exodus 20:15? "You shall not steal." You know, today we're going to talk about not about physical stealing, not about taking something physically, but the intangible theft, the things that we take from each other that we don't see physically. And what do I mean? We're talking about stealing character. We're talking about stealing reputation, stealing authority. That's what we want to look at. So I want to start by looking at the meanings of some words, the meanings of the words steal, gossip, trespass, which when you see the definitions or the meanings of these, it's going to help you understand better of how all this ties into stealing. I want you also to consider how we deal with each other on job sites, or when we do our duties, or when we're just fellowshipping with friends at the diner, or maybe when we're talking with our family members. Okay, so simply, definition of steal is taking something that does not belong to you or without permission, to take another's property without permission or legal right and without intending to return it, especially secretly or by force. Think about that, without legal right. Think about that. That's something Satan did to Yahweh. Satan stole from Yahweh a position without legal right. To take without right and written intent to keep or make use wrongfully. Look at what the Catholic Church has done with the laws of Yahweh. To make oneself the focus. To be selfish. That's one of those words that means 666. To claim credit for another's ideas. To take without acknowledgement ideas, credits, words, etc. The next one, I'm going to pull this up, is trespass. And this is an unlawful act causing injury to the person, property, or rights of another, committed with force or violence, an offense, sin, or wrong. And then the last one, hope everybody can see that, is gossip, which is the casual or loose conversation about other people involving details that are not confirmed as being true. Is rumor or general talk that is damaging to reputation, it is usually more or less malicious. So I want you to keep those things in mind as we move forward, because we're going to look at some things that show exactly all of these things that go on when we get involved in stealing the intangible. So, and I'd like everybody to turn over to Isaiah 14. Isaiah 14, verses 12 through 14, because I want to show an example of how Satan did just all these things, exactly did everything in those definitions. And this is something that we're all familiar with. In fact, the great Deacon Bill read this part, like, referenced part of this a minute ago. So Isaiah 14, verse 12 says, "How have you fallen from heaven, O Hillel, Lucifer, Aphrodite, Venus, child of the light? How you are cut down to the ground, you who weaken the nations." She weakened the nations by lying to them, by stealing Yahweh's reputation, by taking and hiding the law, by changing all these things so that no one could find the truth, and they weakened themselves both mentally and physically. In verse 13, it says, "For you have said in your heart, I will ascend above the heavens. I will raise my throne high, throne above the stars of Yahweh. I will sit in the highest place on the holy mountain of the congregation. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High." This was an explanation of all those definitions. She did it. She stole Yahweh's position. She stole his authority. And she's totally thrown his character in the mud. You just have to believe. And don't worry about any of those laws. We don't need any of them. Oh, and you can go any day you want to anywhere you want. Doesn't matter. But this is the biggest character reputation heist in history. And, you know, once you damage someone's character or reputation, you're not going to easily get it back. It's going to take a long time to build it back up. Satan actually put a plan in motion to take the possession of Yahweh, steal Yahweh's authority and character and his reputation, which she's done quite well. Let's turn over to Romans 1:25. Because as a result of this, she had our, like the first pope we taught with, one of the speakers before me, Cain, actually kept on going with this to the point where in Romans 1:25 it says, it's on page 873, it says, "Who exchanged the truth of Yahweh for the lies, Lord, gods, and demons, and worshipped and served the creation rather than the creator, who is blessed forever. Praise Yahweh, hallelujah, Yahweh. So man became so deceived by Satan's priests, they changed the holy scriptures. Replaced Yahweh's name with words like Lord and God. Removed all the names and changed them to hide Yahweh from the people. Tricked man into worshiping God. So Satan stole Yahweh's reputation, his position, his authority, and even his character. I keep hitting this because I want you to really think about it. When Satan's gossiping and taking this position and doing all these things, she's stealing all of this from Yahweh. So how does this apply to us today in the house of Yahweh? Excuse me, wait. At this time, Satan has the whole world believing the Creator is a God, and man is blinded, such as, like, for your notes, Revelation 12:9, she's deceived the whole world. And also 2 Corinthians 4:4, how the gods of this world have blinded the minds of those who do not believe the message. So much so that mankind believes that the scriptures say things they don't even say. Most people, when they read, they have no understanding. And when they do read, they think it means something completely different. So how does this apply to us today in the house of Yahweh? When we bring up our brothers and sisters in a negative light to others, we are stealing their reputation. If, for instance, can you believe what they did the other day? I simply asked for that pencil, and I looked at me, rolled their eyes. I cannot believe the attitude that was shown. I mean, something as simple as that you're actually gossiping and throwing a negative light on your brother or your sister at that point. If, you know, or maybe you haven't seen someone in a while. Maybe you haven't seen them at services and you're concerned. And you mention to somebody, hey, have you seen Brother Cain? I haven't seen him in a while. He hasn't been in service for at least a month. I'm really concerned. I'm really worried about him. Person next to you, maybe he fell away. You know, I heard somebody saw him over there. Before you know it, that story goes and gets traveled around where he fell away and he's actually working against the work. If we have concern about someone, we need to take it to the proper authority and then pray for that person. But otherwise, we need to forget it and move on. Maybe contact the person and let them know you're thinking about them. Remember, we're all overcoming and we're supposed to be building each other up. As well, when we are on a job site or in a class, we need to take upon ourselves, we take upon ourselves to decide what or how to handle situations. And when we do it without asking, we are actually stealing authority. And this can be done in the most simple and subtle way. We many times don't even realize in the most basic situations, like when you're on a job site and the supervisor's not there and somebody asks you a question that's not your authority or responsibility, but instead of calling or waiting for the authority, you decide, well, we do this all the time, and this is how we handle it, so this is how we're going to do it. That's really, you just stole that authority. Speed isn't the issue. It's making sure we do it the right way. In closing, we need to make every effort to be building each other up and not engage in gossip or trampling each other's reputation. So keep studying and striving for the goal. And remember, we're making preparations for the feasts that are fast approaching. We need to consider the law and understand we can steal our way out of the kingdom. We can steal our own opportunity from ourselves. Remember, we are all still overcoming. And if Yahweh finds us worthy of being here, who are we to disagree? I have everybody please stand. I'd like to introduce the next speaker, Larry Deacon Emmanuel Hawkins.
All right, praise Yahweh. You may be seated. All right, brothers and sisters, how's the overcoming doing? Is it okay? A little tough, huh? Yeah, praise Yahweh. All right. You know, brothers and sisters, as we come close here to the finishing of Yahweh's plan, which is you and me, our endurance and our discipline must take shape. Because if you remember the video that the great deacon showed, this is what we're getting ready for. Not to cause that, but to repair that. You see, this is what we're getting ready for. And if you turn over to 1 Corinthians 9:27, this is familiar scripture in the house of Yahweh, right? It's a very familiar scripture here. Let's make sure we understand what we're doing here. You know? Okay, 1 Corinthians chapter 9, 27. Okay? Let's start off right here at 24 right quick. It says, do you not know that those who run in a race, they compete, but not only to receive the prize. So run your race so that you may lay hold of the prize and make it yours. Let's take a look at verse 27 real, real closely here. No, I discipline my body and bring it into subjection so that after I have preached to others, I myself may not be disqualified. So we see that our bodies must be disciplined. Now, discipline means to develop. Key into that word, develop. This is what we're all doing here in Yahweh's Great House, is to develop a pattern of behavior by repeatedly and carefully following certain rules and guidelines. Now, that carefully, if for your notes, let's just look at Deuteronomy 6, 3. It says, hear therefore, O Israel, that's us, and be careful to obey so that it may be well with you and so that you may greatly multiply as Yahweh, the mighty father of your fathers, has promised you in the land that flows with milk and honey. So when the brothers and sisters that are coming come here, they're going to be full of this milk and honey because this is what we're doing. We're getting this milk and honey first so we can give it to them through pastor and through the priest. That's right. So we must take this seriously by getting our and developing this discipline and this endurance. Okay? So what part of our body needs to be disciplined? Does anybody want to take a guess at what part of our body needs to be disciplined? What was that? Mm-hmm. That's right. 2 Corinthians 10:5. Let's go there. Let's all read it together. Please, let's read this one together. Because sometimes we just, including myself, I'm talking about myself really, actually, you know. Sometimes I just, whoa, I should have not said that. You know what I mean? Not to cover up pastor there. Okay. 10:5, 2 Corinthians. Demolishing arguments and destroying every high thing that exalts itself against the one who is Yahweh. Notice that right there. Bringing under control every thought to the obedience of Yahshua. Right? Bringing in that every thought, that thought that says, okay, pastor is, I don't know why he's doing this, or the priests are doing this. Grab that thought and bring it into subjection. Bring it into subjection. Don't allow our minds to go off in a tangent against the house of Yahweh, which Yahweh has brought here for you. He has established it here for us. How is it that we can talk against it? How is that? We've got to bring these thoughts against our brothers, the Kohans, the Kohanas, the judges. We got to bring those together and we got to stomp them down. We got to do that. You know? So what is it going to take? What will it take for us to do that? It takes force. Force, strength, or energy as an aptitude trait, of physical action or of movement, mental or moral strength or power, capacity to persuade or convince. See, we got to convince ourselves. We have to convince ourselves through the self-talk. Okay, am I looking at this situation correctly? Am I okay here? Am I keeping everything in perspective? Am I making this a little bit of a problem here? Normally, yes, we are. That's why we got to hold ourselves. It says strength, energy, power, and intensity. Okay? The intensity. Now, in the 10th book of Israel, okay, this was one of the sermons that Pastor gave just before atonement. And if you haven't read this in 2010, in the second book of Israel, 2010, I really recommend it before atonement comes. I really do. Okay, so on page 92, verse 62, it says, this word, Anan, means afflict. It also means humble. Humble and force yourself. You have to force it. It means force. You've got to force yourself to do it. You know why? Because the carnal mind is a regular fight all the time with Yahweh's laws. It's against Yahweh's laws. That's the reason you have to force yourself to call the Sabbath delight. You got to force yourself to love your brother. You got to force that. And then, after you force it, we'll see what takes place after that. But if you do it right, if you do it right, you're going to start loving your brother and sister and the priest and the house of Yahweh that Yahweh has given you. Let me just remind everybody what this word shushak, or koshak, I'm sorry. Oh, sorry about that. Now, the Hebrew word koshak, for instance, is translated love in your Bible. Now, it's the kind of love when one wants to cling to another. Now, when you start forcing this, this develops the true love that we need to have for one another, the true love that's unbreakable. It's unbreakable, unshakable between us as a family that Yahweh is putting together. Okay? You know, it's between married partners. Most of us experience it between man and a wife. It takes place when you delight in being around another person. You just take delight in being around your brothers. It don't matter if they upset you, they get on your last nerve. You just take delight in being around that brother. It's actually longing for another person when they're not around you. You have a longing in your heart to be with them. This is koshak. So when you discipline and have that endurance, this love is what develops. You know, it's this love that develops, you know, between us. Because you all I got. And I'm all you have. And this is where we're supposed to have this. We're supposed to have this together. Okay? As we're wrapping up here, keep in mind with that video. Oh, sorry about that, you guys. Because that's what we're going to stop, okay? That's what we're going to stop. And we're going to stop it real soon. Real, real soon. Remember, endurance and discipline. Okay? Then force yourself. Persuade yourself. Okay? Well, if you all please stand. I'd like to introduce the great Hamanya Hawkins.
Shabbat Shalom, family. You may be seated. The title of my sermonette today is Endure Like a Donkey, Don't Race Like a Horse. So, endure like a donkey, don't race like a horse. Okay. So, what I've got up here on the overhead is what's referred to as an emotional frequency hierarchy chart. And we'll relabel that conversion process for the title, for the purpose of the sermonette. And if you look down here, you'll see there's a frequency of 20 and 30 for guilt and shame. And so this is what I call the starting process when we first come to Yahweh's house. And you can see the color here is red. And so this begins the step of our conversion process. And there's things that we have early on, like apathy. A lot of us go through grief, where we're sad about the things we had done in our past. We probably have a little bit of fear related to the things we've done. And then we're still working on some things that we're overcoming, like coveting and lust, anger, pride. But then as we start moving towards conversion, we take on courage and we start asking. Asking, you know, which way should I go? We talk to the priests. And we've got a willingness, a humble attitude to obey what the priests are telling us to do. And then we really start accepting Yahweh's laws into our life. And, you know, we reason that that's the right way to go. And what I found really interesting about this is there's the next three, and it's actually interesting the order they're in. If anybody is familiar with the front of our building out here, the next three is peace, joy, and love. And, of course, love is the keeping of Yahweh's laws. So before we can have joy and peace, we need to be willing and start keeping Yahweh's laws. And then at the very top, they call it 700 plus, which is like the true 700 club. And that's Yahweh unity. That's when we come in complete unity with Yahweh. And that completes our conversion process. And that's the finish. You can see the smiley face here. But it's interesting. It's got the Alpha and the Omega. And at the very end is that deep royal purple that we're all striving for. And this came from the person that wrote the book that has this chart in it is Dr. David R. Hawkins, which is obviously no coincidence there. But the name of the book was Power Versus Force, which is kind of interesting on what's been brought out so far about power and force today. And of course, in that reference, it's really talking about Yahweh's way versus Satan's way. So Yahweh's way being the power, he being the only power in the universe, his laws being his power, and then Satan's way is by force, this evil beastly system that suppresses everyone. So endure like a donkey, don't race like a horse. There was a book that I mentioned last time I spoke. It's called The Wisdom of Donkeys. And the title of the donkey in this book is Gribouye, and that means someone that's a bit simple, a bit naive, maybe even a bit of an idiot in the world's eyes. And on page 3 of that book, it reads that donkeys' legs are beguiling, their knees and shanks, their fetlocks and hocks, their cannon bones and pastern joints are so dainty and graceful, so slender, whereas horses' legs look clumsy in comparison. It's unbelievable the load these little legs on a donkey can bear. They're unimaginable for any human, not in the house of Yahweh. No horse could ever pace up a narrow mountain pass carrying a donkey's load, could do it so assuredly or confidently, so reliably or patiently. So you can see a lot of those attributes in all of us. Horses are faster. So in the world, there's a lot of fast people. Yet they have much less endurance than donkeys, and they're nowhere near as agile. They're edgier, too, especially in tight situations. They bolt, whereas a donkey freezes. You can usually cajole an anxious horse to do things against its better interest, frighten the horse into galloping along hazardous, unsafe routes. And that's not so with donkeys, who have a highly developed sense of self-preservation, thus a donkey's perceived stubbornness. So Pastor had said a while back that the human body was designed by Yahweh to walk 26 miles a day. And you know, there was questions that I've had recently. I was like, so why is it so hard to walk these 26 miles now after having led such a healthy lifestyle all these years? being in Yahweh's house. Why is it so hard enduring now after years of mental and physical conditioning? And why was it like harder for me to endure now than it was when I first came to Yahweh's house? And then I said, wait a minute, stop. You know, all these negative thoughts. And, you know, I like this term that I heard, that these negative thoughts are like thought worms. They're these evil parasites that we need to get out of us, that we need to cleanse out of us, these negative thoughts, these thought worms. So there was an expression that I heard too. Rather than saying these things like this to yourself, start saying, what would it take? What would it take? You know, what would it take for me to endure and finish this race? So if you look over to Philippians 3:12 on page 923 in your book Yahweh. And I think it might be 921 if you have a newer book Yahweh. But so 923. And it's Philippians 3:12-16. And the section is entitled Attain to Perfection. And it says in verse 3:12, not as though I have already attained, nor were already perfect, but I keep on pursuing after it, that I may take hold of that for which Yahshua Messiah has also taken hold of me. Brothers, I do not consider myself as having yet taken hold of it, but one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forward to those things which are ahead. I press on toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of Yahweh and Yahshua Messiah. Therefore, let us, as many as are perfect, think in this way, and if anything you think otherwise, Yahweh will indeed reveal this to you. Nevertheless, to that which we have already attained, let us walk according to that standard. Let us be of the same mind. So Yahweh is allowing us to endure. Excuse me. Yahweh is allowing our endurance to be tested for a reason. You know, he knows that we need more conditioning and training to finish the race set before us. If he gave us the quick gain when the running was easy and let us skip the remainder of the course, we wouldn't get the lasting reward. Yahweh is not interested in making his job easier, nor is he interested in making our job easier, nor is Yahshua our pastor, nor are any of the teachers that are in unity with Yahweh and his house. What Yahweh, Yahshua, pastor, and the teachers that are in unity with the house of Yahweh are interested is making sure that we receive the necessary conditioning and training we need to finish this race. They are interested in us fully learning what to teach, so be ready to zealously teach others all that we have learned at the appointed time. So just like the donkey in that book, Gris Bouillet, the donkey in the story, we may appear... Simple, naive, maybe in a bit of a idiot in the world's eyes, but we are surely pacing up that narrow mountain pass, carrying a heavy donkey's load with patience and endurance on a very safe and well-established path. We cannot be cajoled to run on hazardous, praise Yahweh. We cannot be cajoled to run on hazardous paths in fear like a horse. We have our ears perked and our eyes fixated on pastor's teachings. Saddling the pack, we must carry, just like that donkey, Yahweh allowed pastor to see in the cloud vision 7 years and 7 days ago. Praise Yahweh. So, if everyone may please stand. Thank you for your time today. And I'd like to turn services over to the great Khan Nathaniel Shong Hawkins.
Praise Yahweh, family of Yahweh. You may all be seated. Wow, we have a packed house today. All thanks and glory unto our Heavenly Father. Today, the lesson that I want to bring is kind of, you know, when Pastor spoke last week, he kind of set my mind to running in so many different directions because he addressed a lot of particular topics. Now, today's lesson, the overall lesson of all the speakers today is the race, okay? And my title is, excuse me, Running the Race Without Complaints. But first, before we go into that lesson, you know, there's something that Pastor said last Sabbath that, you know, really had potential to pretty much derail my whole lesson and get me to focus specifically on what he had mentioned. And one of the things that he said, one of the many things that he said last Sabbath was, you can't just tell a child not to bully and show him that it says it in his book and then walk out of the room like as though the child is going to be able to keep up with that standard on his own. He said that, and he showed us that the foundation, okay, the environment has to be set properly in order that a child will know not to bully. Now, what that environment has to be is, it has to be the entire family of Yahweh, okay? But that entire family has to be in unity, okay? There has to be a firm, concise, and steadfast methodology to raising all of our children. And if we don't have that steadfastness, what we wind up doing is compromising the plan of Yahweh. Okay, now, we all know that the plan of Yahweh will not be stopped. You and I can't stop the plan of Yahweh. The scripture shows that Yahweh watches over his word to fulfill it. So you and I can't stop it. Now, we can stop the plan of Yahweh for us as individuals. Okay, so by my failures, I could cause a stumbling block for my brother. And that's what the scripture shows plainly. That truly, yes, all of us must be tested, but woe unto the one through whom the test comes. Okay? So that, and that woe means concern. He should be very considerate and thoughtful of his actions. Okay? That's what woe means. Woe doesn't always mean condemnation or utter destruction. But what it does mean is be careful. Be very, very careful and very, very considerate. If you would turn over to 1 Kefa, there's a lot of scriptures that we can go over. But let's go over 1 Kefa chapter 2. 1 Kefa and chapter 2. I didn't put the page number. Because there's what Yahweh has done was to make sure that the example that we've been given through Yahshua Messiah was well documented. Okay, and the plan of Yahweh is such that we should be made into the image of likeness of Yahweh through the example that Yahshua Messiah left us. Okay, so we're going to deal with some certain things that Yahshua did in his last few minutes on earth. Okay, his last few minutes on earth. Let's start at verse 20. So it's 1 Kefa chapter 2 and verse 20. It says, now what glory is it? Okay, now what glory is it if you receive a beating for doing wrong and you endure it? So if you're wrong and you receive correction, Yashub said at one point, look, we can't just be thankful to Father Yahweh when things are going great. And then when things start taking a little bit of a sway to the wrong direction, or what we would think is the wrong direction, then we start, woe is me, you know, and I can't believe Yahweh is doing this to me. Because when we settle ourselves and we really start looking at the plan of Yahweh and knowing that Yahweh said all things work together toward righteousness. Yeah, but when somebody says something to me and I get upset, then, you know, that's not righteousness. That's not working toward righteousness. The plan of Yahweh is that we would be made perfect through suffering. And the only reason why we have to suffer is because of the carnal mind that's in each and every one of us. Okay, Yahweh, remember the last time I had the opportunity to speak, we went over what mourning is, and that the mourning that Yahweh wants us to experience is the word, the Hebrew word haga, and it means to be considerate, to be thoughtful, to be mindful. This is what we see in Yahshua Messiah. Okay, so let's continue. It says, but if we suffer for doing righteousness and you endure it, then this is commendable before Yahweh. Okay, so when we go through the trials, when we go through the tribulations, but we remain mindful of Yahweh, that's where Yahweh commends us. Yeah, that's where Yahweh says, well done. That's where the adversary says, shoot, I guess I can't test this person because I'll be throwing tests at them and they're glorifying Yahweh. We back off of him, move on to the next guy. Okay? Because that's what the scripture says. If we resist the adversary, then she will what? Flee. These are Yahweh's words, and we can't take them back because you and I didn't say it. Right? And Yahweh is watching over his words in order to fulfill them. And so if he told us that if we resist the adversary, then she will flee, believe it. You and I have to believe it. Right? And if we believe that, then there won't be complaining. Okay? Now, there is a difference between complaining and issuing a concern. Okay? Complaining sets us on the wrong track, okay? But anyway, let me get because, again, what Pastor showed us, what we see here with Yahshua Messiah, if you would turn over to, let's go over to Proverbs. Proverbs, this is on page 507. Page 507, okay? And it's Proverbs 18, verses 20 to 21. Proverbs 18, verses 20 to 21. It says, again, we have to understand how to run this race and how to make this race or our experiences while being in this race effective in order to work toward righteousness for each and every one of us, okay? So verse 20, it says, a man's stomach will be filled with the fruit of his mouth. So he must be satisfied with the harvest of his lips. So the things that we say, you know, I was talking with one of the priests. We were going over some situations that Yahweh has blessed us to experience. And we were saying that, you know, the way that an individual speaks, okay, the words that we choose to use can wind up binding us into a covenant with the adversary or with Yahweh without even knowing it. Your own mouth can cause you to fall into a trap. You know, there's a saying in the world that that something like the road to destruction is paved with great intentions. This is where we have to understand that the method that Yahweh sets before us in keeping his laws is a deliberate one. He made sure that the laws of Yahweh are written out so that we can practice them and so that we can learn to get to that purple that the Greek deacon was speaking about earlier, which is to love Yahweh's law. Those are the individuals, those who learn to love Yahweh's law will be the ones who find themselves at the left hand of Yahweh with our great teacher. Okay? At the left hand of Yahweh, if we will allow ourselves to love Yahweh's law. Okay, so, but it says here in verse 21, death or life is in the power of the tongue. A man will eat the fruits his tongue chooses. So the words that we choose to say, they're going to be fed right back to us. Okay, now, Yahshua, back to 1 Kefa. Okay, because this is what is said about Yahshua. Now, he suffered all of these things. And it says, verse 21, for this you were called. Okay, we were called to endure that same suffering. Let's go back up to verse 20, the middle of verse 20. It says, but if you suffer for doing righteousness and you endure it, this is commendable before Father Yahweh. For this we were called. Okay, the suffering comes because of our own carnal mind. So if we're suffering, that means something is being worked out of us. Right? It doesn't feel great to suffer because of the carnal mind. But our job is to suffer and to become in the likeness of Yahshua Messiah. It says, for the Messiah also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps. Verse 22, who committed no sin. Now, Yahshua Messiah committed no sin. Nor was guile found in his mouth. Nor was guile found in his mouth. Now, you and I, we know that we are sinners. We have sinned. We don't practice sin. As long as we're in the house of Yahweh, following our instructions, doing your confessions, we are not practicing sin. If we're following the instructions that come forth from the witness, we're not practicing sin. We might fall, but then we get back up. Okay? And by doing so, by getting back up, we've broken the practice of sin. So that's you and I right now. Yahshua Messiah is the only one who made it to the right hand of Yahweh without sinning at all. Now that second part, though, you and I can practice not having guile in our mouths. Okay? And that guile is what causes us to not be able to run the race properly. Guile is deceit. Guile is ulterior motives. Guile is ulterior intentions. Guile is 666, me, myself, and I. Because if you're focused on yourself, you're not going to really be worried about your sister. You're not really going to be worried about your brother. You're first. Okay? First. There's a pattern that Yahweh has given us, and we must follow that pattern. We have to follow that standard. And the pattern is to be considerate of Yahweh first. Because when Yahshua Messiah was asked, which of the laws, remember they tried to trip him up, which of the laws is the most important? He said, you must love Yahweh with all your heart, soul, and might. Then he stopped and he's like, yeah, but these guys are going to be like, if I only have to love Yahweh, then I don't have to worry about my brother. And the second is just like it. Yeah, let me stop that right there. Nip it at the butt. The second is just like it. Love your brother as yourself, right? So this is the most important thing for us. And our children being brought up under our guidance and under our direction are subject to our teaching, okay, as individuals. So I'm spending a lot of time, okay? So, and this is, you know, we have to be mindful of these things because Yahweh has a great plan for us. If we go over to let's go over to Daniel, the book of Daniel. Daniel chapter 12. Daniel chapter 12 and verse 7, okay? There's an awesome plan that Yahweh has for us. It's an awesome plan. And we want to be part of it. We want to run this race all the way to the end so we can hear our Father say to us, well done. You know, that we can hear Yahshua Messiah give us that beautiful sentence or that beautiful judgment. We're not finishing. Keep a hand over in First Kefa. But it says, in verse 7, then I heard a man clothed in linen, I wonder who that is, who in that future day is teaching, when he held up his right hand and his left hand toward heaven and vowed by him who lives forever, it will be for a time, times, and half a time. And Yahweh will have accomplished pouring out his power. Again, the deacon heard, we heard from the deacon previously, that Yahweh will accomplish pouring out his power through you all, okay, through his holy people. Now, if you stop and think of what that means, for Yahweh to pour out his power upon the earth alone, let alone the universe, that means everything that is occurring in this world will be able to put it, and I oftentimes, I think that we, as a body, we don't really think about the ramifications, okay, what that means, what we have to do in order to pour out Yahweh's power on all of his creation. This means taking out the guile. This means, I guarantee you this, if we could teach a young child or any children not to bully, you could teach a 125-year-old not to bully. Okay? Because that same pattern is followed in adults. You remember the Peaceful Solution says, you know, when we were young, throw temper tantrums, fall on the floor, roll on the floor, and you're in the middle of Walmart, and it's like, I want to spank you right now. But there's cameras, there's eyes, there's, you know. And when we get older, we throw temper tantrums, but we just don't roll. Imagine Khan, Nathaniel rolling all over the ground. The priest told me that. Right? I can't. I have to be more distinguished. I have to be, you know, I'm a lot bigger, right? It'll look totally crazy. But we throw temper tantrums too, but we do it in different ways. Silent treatment. I ain't talking to him. Hey, shalom, Great Kahan. Shalom. You know, these things ought not be numbered amongst us, but you see that they really shouldn't. But the carnal mind is what hinders us and causes us to suffer, okay? The carnal mind is what hinders us and causes us to suffer. Who remembers what a hindered God is? Say it again. Left behind. The gods that we left behind in Egypt. So what if we didn't leave them behind? Then they're called hindering gods. They're still hindering us. Okay? Hindered is past tense, but if we carry them into the house of Yahweh, then they're hindering gods. And those hindering gods follow after guile. They follow after selfishness. They follow after inconsiderateness. They follow after disrespect. And if those gods are allowed to continue to hinder us, then we won't have our position that Yahweh wants so badly. He does. He's thirsting to give us these positions. But we'll go back over to what we see here in Yahshua Messiah. It says, who committed no sin, verse 23, who when he was reviled did not revile in return. No, he taught. When the young ones disrespect, you know, their teachers, is it time now to cast them to the wolves and cast them to the dogs? No. It's time now to continue to teach. And it said, we have to. Verse 23. But Yahshua Messiah committed himself to him who judges righteously. He committed himself. And the reason why we know that he committed himself, if we go over to Luke chapter 23, is because he said it. All the things that Yahshua Messiah suffered, it all culminated in him saying this one thing. Okay? He said in verse 46, Luke 23, verse 46, when Yahshua had cried with a loud voice, he said, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. I'm committed now. All my strength, you know, that I was able to pull and tug and is not with me. I've completely given myself over to you, Father Yahweh. I am committed now. And this is the example that Yahshua has for us. We have to commit ourselves to Yahweh. Okay, so we have to be educated in how to teach the children also to commit themselves. And it doesn't come through just saying it. Oh, stop doing what you're doing. No, it comes through effectively teaching it and encouraging and convincing. Okay, praise Yahweh. If you'd all please stand. I'd like to turn the floor over to the great Kahan Shimon Hawkins.
Yeah, you can be seated.
The title of my sermon is Yisrael Hawkins Will Square This Circle. How many of you like riddles? I only got one hand. I thought I'd get more because I was going to say how many of you like problems, and I knew I wouldn't get any hands. So this doesn't need to be, if you remember this, it was try this, it will solve your problem. So like in my spare time, instead of going on vacation, I try to think of problems and see how I would solve them. Okay. During the course of me speaking, keep in mind Prohibitive Law 246 and 271. 246 is do not remove a landmark or alter boundaries. Prohibitive Law 271 is do not use dishonest weights and measures. The problem that I'm going to talk about that I came across is a problem that was talked about by ancient geometers, which is called squaring the circle. And the mathematical way of solving it was try to get a square and a circle to have the same area. A square has four corners at 90 degrees and a circle is 360 degrees, but they found out that it's mathematically impossible. But everyone knows that know of the problem, everybody knows it has more of a relation to the world that we live in than actually as a math problem. Geometry is a word, it's broken up into geo and metri, geo meaning earth and metri meaning measure, which would mean to measure the earth. Okay? There is in the script in Proverbs 8:27. People will take the scripture where it says, this is page 501, when he prepared the heavens, I, wisdom, was there. When he drew the circle on the face of the deep. So they'll refer to heaven as a circle. And then, of course, everyone knows the four corners of the earth, and they'll relate the earth to being a square. Everyone knows the earth's a globe, right? So when I'm saying this, I'm putting it in a figurative sense. Like the earth being square, not the earth physically. Okay, not the earth physically. Okay, but if you look up the definitions of these words, you'll even hear it said on the news a lot when they'll deal with problems. They'll say, well, how are you going to square this? Which means, how are you going to make this right? How are you going to make this fair for everyone? Square can mean level or parallel, properly arranged, in decent order, compatible or in agreement, or fair and honest. Okay, in Genesis 1:28, this is on page 1. On page 1, covering verse 28. Then Yahweh blessed him, and Yahweh said to him, be fruitful and multiply. This is what kind of makes me wonder why, you know, they think the earth is overpopulated when that's the instruction is to populate the earth. Be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it. Okay, the word fill is 4390, and it means to fence, it's actually in the side note, to fence, or set boundaries, okay, to strengthen for establishing exclusive right to possession, and to subdue something is to subjugate it, bring it under domination, especially by conquest, or bring into subjection. So when you talk about making something fair, what is being said here is to square this circle, okay? Make fair the earth. You're going to fill it, but Yahweh wants all things done decently in order, and he wants it made fair. On page 65, Exodus 24:10. And they saw the heavenly father of Israel, and under his feet was something like a pavement made of sapphire, clear as the very sky itself. Now, sapphire is a stone representing the book of Yahweh. Okay, seek out the book of Yahweh and read. The law of Yahweh. So Yahweh governs everything in accordance with his laws. He has in front of him the sea of glass. Okay, you'll also find that In Revelations, page 974, saying the same thing that Moshe saw. Revelations 4:6. And before the throne there was a sea of glass like crystal. And in the midst of the throne and surrounding the throne were four living creatures full of eyes before and behind. I think it's interesting. One of the faces that these living creatures had, if you remember, was the face of a calf, right? And if you ever look up cow, right? Like, I've never used it as a verb, but it means to force someone. It means force. To cow someone means to force them. Now, in Exodus 25 and verse 40 on page 66, it says, "See that you make them according to the pattern which was shown you on the mountain," which connects with 1 Corinthians 14:40. "Let all things be done decently and in order." Okay, so this is a Masonic symbol, which if you can see the compass and the square, or the geometers would call it a compass and a straight edge. Okay, but here, so a compass and a straight edge would be used to make this. I'm going to make a drawing for you in a second. On page 558 in Isaiah 44 and verse 2, page 558, we're going to be in this chapter probably most of it. But on page 558, Isaiah 44 and verse 2, "This is what Yahweh says, who made you and formed you from the womb. Who will help you? Do not be afraid, Jacob, my servant, and Yeshurun, beloved Yisrael, whom I have appointed. I will pour water upon him who is thirsty and floods upon the dry ground. I will pour out my spirit upon your seed and my blessings upon your offspring." Now, this will go down through verse 8, explaining the work that Yisrael Hawkins will do and how Yahweh formed him from the womb. In Exodus 20 and verse 2 is the commandment where it says, "Do not make for yourself any graven image," or "Do not carve yourself into the image of the gods." Okay, in Isaiah in 44 and verse 9, "All who make graven images of gods are nothing. Their objects of devotion are worthless. Those who testify on their behalf do not see, nor do they understand, so that they may be ashamed. Who has formed a god or cast a graven image without intending to make a profit? He and his kind will be put to shame. The craftsmen are only men." And then he will go into the description of craftsmen. Okay, he will describe something that they do. He talks about the blacksmith, and he talks about the carpenter and how they use tools to make something. Okay, so that's a perfect square. And you will, now if you notice that, if you could subtract some of the lines, you'd actually see the baseball diamond. You know, they say baseball is the Masonic sport. But you'll see, and it's referred to as a diamond. Now this is, I was supposed to actually read this verse before I did that. So in verse 13, "The carpenter stretches out his measure and marks the outline. He roughs it out with a chisel and marks it with a compass. He makes it in the image of a man, according to the beauty of man," of a man. Okay? The word chisel out is number 471 and means planes or chisel, and coming from word 7106, meaning to make corners. In Yeketskia, this is on page 668. Let's see if I can. Okay, 668. This is referring to the chisel will make corners. In verse 22, in the four corners of the court, there were courts joined, 40 cubits long, about 70 feet and 30 feet wide. These four corners and the four corners were the same size. So if you remember that symbol I drew, I got a neater version. Okay, and right at the center is the altar of death. Okay? Right at the center is that altar that Pastor has brought to our attention. Now, when you look up the word chisel, okay, you're chiseling corners. Maybe this will make... I remember Pastor cried when he read this. On page 705... On page 705, when you chisel, the word's definition means to strip off. Okay, and if you look at the corner, these are courts where they make judgment. Okay, then I said, "Hear now, O heads of Jacob, you rulers of the house of Israel, is it not for you to know justice, you who hate righteousness and love evil, who strip off the skin of my people and the meat from their bones, who also eat the meat of my people, who strip off their skin, break their bones, and chop them into pieces as meat for the pot, as flesh within the cauldron." Okay, and you can see why Pastor gets worked up about the altar and what it represents and the types of judgment that men that do not follow righteousness will subject mankind to. If you remember, King David said, "Don't deliver me into men. I would rather fall into the hands of Yahweh than be delivered into the hands of men." Now, in Yeketzkeh 18, 25 through 29, Yahweh asked the question in a few verses where he says, "Are not my ways equal? Are not your ways unequal?" Okay, he really asks you to look at what you do. And then he makes the statement on page 558 in Isaiah 44, 7. Isaiah 44 and verse 7. "Who as I will foretell and set it in order for me, since I appointed the ancient people and the things which are coming and will come, let them foretell them." Now, he describes the two witnesses in this chapter, and then he goes into how mankind makes gods. Okay, and he makes it in the form of a man. Okay, and in verse 13 it says, "According to the beauty of a man." In Exodus 2:2 on page 45, when you talk about someone who is anointed and spoken of in advance, the one that the people should go to for guidance, this is what beauty should be. In 45, chapter 2 and verse 2, now I'll read 1 and 2. "Now a man of the house of Levi married a Levite woman, and the woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw he was a beautiful child, she hid him 3 moons. She knew who Moshe was." That's what the beauty was, is he was spoken of and outlined in advance. That's what beauty is. Okay? So when you look at Yisrael Hawkins, that's a beautiful man. Okay, now, so what mankind will do is he will carve you into the beauty of man. You know, whatever is pleasing to the eyes, you're a well-dressed man, come and be our leader. You know, but if you look in Isaiah 44, if you read this whole chapter, you know, really get into the chapter, watch how it speaks about Pastor and Jacob and what they will do, and then look at what mankind, how he has changed these types of the judgments, the laws, the statutes, and the judgments, and then you get what they do. It says, no one considers logically in his mind, neither is there knowledge nor understanding, to say, I have burned part of this in the fire, yes, I have baked bread upon its coals, roasted meat over them, and have eaten. Then will I now make the rest of this an abomination, a god? Will I now fall down in front of the trunk of the tree? He feeds on ashes. A deceived mind has turned him aside, so he cannot deliver himself. Can't deliver himself. Yahweh says, I will bring forth my plan. So he can't deliver himself, nor say, is this not a lie in my right hand? Now, this is to Pastor. Remember these lessons about the worships of God's Elohim, or Jacob and Yisroel, for you are servants. I made you. Mankind didn't form these men. You know, the two last days anointed witness, they were formed by Yahweh. Their ways are Yahweh's ways. I'll rehearse and then I'll close and turn it over. On verse 11 says, he and his kind will be put to shame. The craftsmen are only men, but Yisroel Hawkins is the last day's witness. And with that, if you'll all please stand. Gather my stuff. Sorry, big con. The great con Levi.
Praise Yahweh. Please be seated. I guess he left his compass up here. The title of the sermon today is Run the Race as a Champion. Run the Race as a Champion. And I'd like to get right into it. Now, a champion is a person who has defeated all opponents in a competition or series of competitions so as to hold first place. And keep that in mind. We'll get back to it later on in the sermon. And also remember that the last will be first, speaking of this work. Let's turn to Hebrews chapter 11. I'd like to read from verse 39. Hebrews chapter 11, found in page 951. And it states, all these, and you have to remember everyone that was spoken of before, Abel, Noah, Abraham, Moshe, Jacob, many others, all these, having obtained a righteous report through the faith, have not received the promise. Yahweh having provided some better thing for us, that they, without us, would not be made perfect. Now, the they is the holy men and women of old, the prophets, the disciples, and so forth. And the us is us in these last days. And I want everyone to really think about that, that we are the us that is being spoken of in verse 40, that they, without us, would not be made perfect. Let's look at chapter 12, verse 1. Therefore, since we are also surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily entraps us, and let us run the race that is set before us with endurance, looking to Yahshua, the first who was led and perfected by the faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the sacrifice, despising the shame, the Basheth Baal Lord, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of Yahweh. For consider him who endured such opposition against himself from sinners, so that you would not become weary and faint in your mind. So this race that we are running, and you have heard a lot about the race in all of the presentations that has been made this morning, is one that we need to run with endurance. But notice what it said about Yahshua in verse 2. It says, looking to Yahshua, the first who was led and perfected by the faith, who for the joy that was set before him. So there was something that was set before Yahshua, something that motivated him on a daily basis, something that helped him in running this race. And we'll cover exactly what this race is. And it has been covered already, so there's nothing new that I'm really going to introduce. But let's turn to Psalm. Keep your place in Hebrews chapter 12. We're going to come back there.
And let's look at Psalm 16. And we are focusing on the joy that was set before Yahshua. What was Yahshua looking forward to? What did he have in his mind as he ran that race, as he ran the race with endurance? In Psalm 16, this is found on page 439 in the book of Yahweh, reading from verse 8, it says, I have set Yahweh before me. Now, this is speaking of Yahshua. So you could see that the number one thing that Yahshua set in front of him was Yahweh. I have set Yahweh always before me, for I am at his right hand. Now, this is a prophecy concerning Yahshua, but remember what we just read in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 2. It says, look to Yahshua, looking to Yahshua, the first who was led and perfected by the faith, who for the joy that was set before him. And verse 8 in Psalm 16 again, I have set Yahweh always before me, for I am at his right hand. Therefore, I shall not be moved nor shaken, for Yahweh is with me. Yahshua's life was a testimony of that fact that Yahweh was indeed with him. Therefore, my heart has joy and my glory rejoices. My flesh shall rest in hope in you, great Yahweh. You will not leave me in the grave, Yahweh. Your Holy One will not suffer corruption. You will show me paths of life. In your presence is full joy. There are pleasures evermore at your mighty right hand. So this is just some of the things that helped Yahshua in running the race that he had to run. He knew these prophecies concerning himself. He totally believed, accepted, and acted on these prophecies. Therefore, in reading Hebrews chapter 12, verse 2 again, it says, looking to Yahshua, the first who was led and perfected by the faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the sacrifice, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of Yahweh. For consider him who endured such opposition against himself from sinners, so that you would not become weary and faint in your own mind. So this is telling us to think about Yahshua, think about the things that he went through, think about the things that he endured. Remember these things as we run the race ourselves, so that we would not become weary and faint in our minds. Now this word faint, it's word number 1519, and this is in Strong's Greek Dictionary. And reading from Thayer's Greek English Lexicon, it means to loose, unloose, to set free. It means to weaken, relax, exhaust, to have one's strength relaxed, to be enfeebled through exhaustion, to grow weak, grow weary, be tired out. So this is what we are told to guard against becoming weary, guard against becoming tired out. Guard against that exhaustion. Guard against wanting to relax, take it easy, have a break, and so forth. We are told to guard against this, and we are told how to guard against this. This same word, 1590, is the same word that is utilized in Galatians chapter 6, verse 9, where it says, do not grow weary of doing righteousness. It's the same word, weary, that is being used. Now, we know that our strength comes from the keeping of the laws of Yahweh. That is the strength of Yahweh. And let's turn to Psalm 19, verse 5. And here we shall read really the subject of this sermon, which is to run the race as a champion. Run the race as a champion. Now remember, Yahshua had certain things that were set in front of him. This last day's work has a lot that is set in front of it. And I don't think I'll have the time to really get into everything that is set in front of us in running this race, but I want to focus more on the attitude that we should run this race with, and to show that running this race is completely doable. It's something that we have been doing for a long time, and we will succeed at it. In Psalm 19, reading verse 5, he comes forth like a bridegroom from his canopy, and he rejoices like a champion to run a race. Now, the book of Yahweh has this verse translated as a champion. The King James Version has this translated as a strong man. And there are many other versions, which I'll just read a few. that showed this the way the scripture is translated. Now, all of these abbreviations stand for different renditions of the book of Yahweh. And at the top it says, which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber and rejoices as a strong man to run his course, who is like a newly married man coming from his bride tent and is glad like a strong runner starting on his way. I'm just going to read the last half of that verse. He rejoices as a strong man to run the race. He rejoices as a giant to run the way. And rejoices as a strong man, or rejoiceth as a strong man to run his course. And rejoiceth as a strong man to run a race. And this is the King James Version. Like a strong man rejoicing to run his course. And like a strong man rejoicing to run his course. Now the strong man, this is word number 1368. And it comes from 1397. It means powerful. I'm just reading the highlighted portions. Powerful, champion, strong man. Now we know that this strength comes forth from the keeping of the laws of Yahweh. And you can write Romans chapter 1, verse 16 for your notes. Now 1368 comes from 1397. 1397 comes from 1396. And it's a primitive root. It means to be strong, by implication, to prevail. Be great, be mighty, prevail, put to more strength, strengthen. So, in running this race as a champion, there's this idea of prevailing. Now, this word prevail, and this is just taken from looking it up on Google, it means prove more powerful than opposing forces. Be victorious. In the synonyms, it means to win, win out, or win through, triumph, be victorious, carry the day, come out on top, succeed, prove superior, conquer, overcome, rule, reign, etc. Now, what I want everyone to have in mind is that this is speaking of us in the last days. When it's talking about the champion to run the race, it's talking about the house of Yahweh in the last days, and it's showing that, yes, we are going to rely upon the laws of Yahweh, which is where our strength comes from. We will look to Yahweh just as Yahshua did, just as the one sent Israel Hawkins has taught us to, and we will practice and keep these laws of Yahweh. Now, in Psalm 19, again, it says he rejoices like a champion to run a race, and this race, it's word number 734, coming from 732. It's a well-trodden road. Now remember we read in Hebrews chapter 11, verses 39 through 40, and there were many others who have run this race before us. So we are not the first ones running this race. This is a well-trodden road. And if you look at the whole book of Yahweh, that's the testimony of all of those who have trodden on this road before us. So this is a well-trodden road. It also means race, and there's some other definitions that is attached to it. But from Brown, Driver, and Briggs, what I have highlighted, this race is referring to a way of living. A way of living. So when we are talking about running this race, we are talking about how we live. The way of life that we observe in the house of Yahweh. And we know, as the rest of Psalm 19 shows, it's according to the laws of Yahweh. We run this race in accordance to the laws of Yahweh. We keep the laws of Yahweh, and that helps us to succeed in running this race as a champion. And remember that word champion, again, it's referring to, let me get that definition back. That word champion is referring to a person who has defeated all opponents in a competition or series of competitions so as to hold first place. And this is basically our life in the house of Yahweh, in that there are many things in this way of life that we have to overcome, that we have to triumph over, that we have to succeed in order to be ranked as having first place, because this is the last day's work. And it's really incredible when you think about it, because, you know, sometimes I do believe we discourage ourselves thinking that we're not going to succeed in this, and there's this nagging doubt or unbelief that, yes, even though we're in the house of Yahweh, and yes, even though we have all of these awesome promises that is promised to us, we are not quite sure that we are the ones who are going to do it. And that doubt that we have, that self-doubt, do hold us back in the house of Yahweh, because every single prophecy shows that we will succeed. Every single prophecy shows that we will succeed. I will challenge anyone to find one prophecy that says this work is not going to succeed. You're going to spend the rest of your life looking for it, because there's none. You know, there's no prophecy showing that this work is not going to succeed. So every single scripture shows that this work is going to succeed. Everything shows that we can live this way of life. Now, I know in the introduction concerning myself and some of the other speakers, it was shown, you know, how many years we have been in the house of Yahweh. And if you think about that, you know, if you have been in the house of Yahweh for over 30 years, over 20 years, over 10 years, over 5 years, and you could go down to the person who is just starting out in the house of Yahweh, what that shows, the length of time that Yahweh has allowed us to have, it proves the point that we can successfully keep the laws of Yahweh. It's a proven point just by the fact that we have endured that long. Just by that fact. Because, you know, really think about it. If you have been here that long, then it's proven that you're keeping the laws of Yahweh. So to the newcomers, it gives them hope. They can look at someone who has been in the house for almost 40, 30, 20-something years, and it will be like, well, yeah, I could do this. It's possible. And for the ones who have been here that long, why should you doubt whether you could keep it or not? Why look at yourself as if every single day you're barely hanging on? I don't know if I'm going to make it tomorrow, and you've been here for 25 years. You know, my faith is just hanging by this thread. I don't know if I could hold on any longer, and you've been here for 30 years. You know, and that's what I'm saying. We have this nagging doubt in our minds that these prophecies is not talking about us, and it plainly is. It is, because remember, as we read in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 40, they without whom? They without us will not be made perfect. And we are the us that the they are relying upon. Now, we are not the first to run this race, by no means. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 17 and read verse 1. Kohel talks about Abraham. Genesis chapter 17. This is found in page 11 in the book of Yahweh. Reading verse 1. When Abram was 99 years old, Yahweh appeared to Abram and said to him, I am Almighty Yahweh, walk in my ways and be perfect. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 6, reading verses 8 and 9. This is on page 5. Genesis chapter 6, reading verse 8 and 9. Verse 8 says, But Noah found regard and honor in the eyes of Yahweh. These are the begettings of Noah. Noah was a just man, perfect in his begettings. Noah walked in the reverence of Yahweh. Now, this word walk, it is 1980 in Strong's Hebrew Dictionary, and I don't have time. I knew I wasn't going to have time to present it, so I didn't even bother to copy it. But it's word number 1980 in Strong's Hebrew Dictionary. And one of the definitions of this word walk, you know what it means? To run. To run. So these were running the race. Of course, in the beginning, they were walking the race. In the last days, we are running the race. But it's word number 1980. And guess what occurred in 1980? This is in every calendar of the house of Yahweh. I'm just going to read it, taken from the Mark of the Beast, part 2. And at chapter 18, it says, The establishment of the house of Yahweh actually began on December 2nd, 1980. 1980, just as that definition of the word walk in those two scriptures that we read, 1980 at the first service in a remodeled mobile home. So that's when we started, or the house of Yahweh in these last days started running this race. Of course, we know that the work was in existence before then, but that's when the race started officially. in 1980, or as Pastor said, the establishment of the house of Yahweh started at that time. Let's turn back to Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11. Getting back to our motivation, what should we be looking forward to? Just as Yahshua did, you know, the joy that was set before him. Just as we read in Psalm 16, verses 8 through 11, the things that are in the plan, the joy, everything that is at Yahweh's right hand. So reading Hebrews chapter 11, verse 8, it says, "By the faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he would afterward receive for inheritance, obeyed, and he went out not knowing where he was going." The pastor explained that Abraham knew where he was going. He was going to the house of Yahweh, but again, this is referring to what he was going to encounter and so forth. But notice verse 10. "For he looked for a city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is Yahweh." So he's looking ahead. He's looking forward. Verse 13. "All these died in the faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off and were convinced of them." And this is the same conviction that each of us have to have in the house of Yahweh. We must be thoroughly convinced of them and embrace them and confess they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been thinking of the country which they had left, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they long for a better kingdom, that is, a heavenly. Therefore, Yahweh is not ashamed to be called their father, for he has prepared a city for them." Let's look at verse 12 again. "Therefore, since we are also surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily entraps us, and let us run the race which is set before us with endurance, looking to Yahshua, the first who was led and perfected by the faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the sacrifice, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of Yahweh. For consider him who endured such opposition against himself from sinners, so that you do not become weary and faint in your minds." Look at verse 12. "Therefore strengthen the hands which hang down and the feeble knees." And you know, you do get tired when you're running for a long time. But we are being encouraged to strengthen the hands that hang down and the feeble knees. "Follow the straight paths made for your feet, so that the lame may not be turned out of the way, but rather may be healed." For my last scripture, let's turn to Isaiah chapter 35, found on page 551, and reading verses 3 through 4, and also verses 8 through 10. Because, again, the whole idea is to run this race with endurance. Live this way of life, knowing that you can succeed at it, knowing that you will fulfill all the promises that are spoken of in the scriptures. Reading verse 3. "Strengthen the weak hands and make firm the feeble knees. Say to those who have a fearful mind, be strong. Do not fear. Behold, your father will come with vengeance." So we know Yahweh doesn't take vengeance on anyone. "He will come and save you." Look at verse 8. "A highway will be there, and a way, and it will be called the way of holiness. The unclean will not pass over it." And again, this is talking about the way of life that we will be leading in the last days. "But it will be for those who walk in that way. Yes, the fools will not err in it. No lion will be there, nor any ravenous beast will go upon it. They will not be found there, but the redeemed will walk there. And the ransom of Yahweh will return and come to Zion with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads. They will obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing will flee away." So may Yahweh bless your understanding. I'll ask for everyone to please stand. Now turn it over to the Son of Israel, Abel, for closing prayer.